Sam Morning Show, Sports on 590 The Fan, JD Bunkus, and Ailish Forfar. Getting more and more excited for tonight's NHL draft. What would our hockey hipster do with the first overall pick? Let's ask this insider that's brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It's Jeff Merrick. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Ailish, how are you, Ailish? You know what I would do? I would try to get the second overall pick as well, and we believe that's exactly what Montreal is trying to do.
That's the word going around Montreal. How possible is that?
That's what they're trying to do. That's the word going around. It's been the conversation the last couple of days that Montreal wants more picks, and they're trying to get that second. We know that the New Jersey Devils have put that pick in play. If the deal is right, but there's like a million different stories going around Montreal and have been for the last 72 hours. You know, everything from they're going to move that second pick. Montreal is going to pick up picks number 1 and 2 so they can, you know, get Shane Wright and Yuri Slafkovsky to, you know, New Jersey's going to trade down to 6 or 7 to try to get David Juracek, the defenseman. It's wild. And you wonder, too, if at the end of all of it, the big story might just be what trades we see over the next couple of days.
Okay. All right. We got a lot of things.
There's a lot there. I just wanted to put a bunch of things on the buffet table here for you guys, and then you can just cherry pick what you want.
Hey, first of all, get off my corner. That's what I do. I say a million things. I'm the person who says the million things, and then you pick from the buffet menu, all right? Okay. My first thought in all of this, though, is, okay, the Montreal thing, I'm not saying I'm surprised you're buying it in the sense of like you're a sap, but whenever these reports happen, and it's like you guys talk about it on your podcast, Elliot loves the Isaiah Thomas line of everybody lies around this time of year, right?
Yes.
And I wonder how much of basketball you know of just because Elliot uses the lines of when he was a basketball reporter. Like, what do you know outside of the world Elliot gives you from his time?
Not much. Between Elliot and this show, that's about the depth of it.
Now, I was going to say, whenever you hear that Isaiah Thomas drop, you're like, yeah, that's crazy, dude.
I've heard it.
I just
assume that it's in this industry, everybody lies all the time. Yeah. It's not exclusive to draft. It's not exclusive to free agency. One of my favorite questions always to ask GMs is, would you lie to protect your teams? Mm-hmm.
I like that question. And they say, they lie and say no.
They usually laugh and shrug it off, which means, yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, listen, would you lie to protect your job or anybody? It's like, yeah, I lie all the time. It's easy. It's fun. It's good. So,
creative truthing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's assume Montreal just stands pat at 1. You do think that they take Wright, though?
I've said Wright all along. I've said, because the one thing that I think that people get hung up on is who's the better player right now. And of all the players in this draft, you know, who could walk into the NHL tomorrow? It's Yuri Slafkovsky. He's got the skill. He's got the size. He's got it. He can walk into the NHL next season. He's probably the only player in this draft, realistically, that plays in the NHL next season. But I think your job as an evaluator or your job as a team is to say, okay, who's going to be the best player at 24? What's the ceiling for all these guys? And I think for the Ontario League players specifically, and they're really underrepresented in this draft class, they pretty much missed an entire year of development. Did they catch that up with one more year in junior hockey? Perhaps, maybe. But I think with someone like Shane Wright, first of all, it's a premium position. Second of all, second half of his season, you know, he was back to being that, you know, 1.5 point player that we all expected. And, you know, the last time he played with high end talent, he was, you know, breaking Connor McDavid's records at the U18. I hear the arguments about, you know, it didn't look like he always brought it every single game this season. I get that. I just think the temptation of drafting a right shot center is just too big. Someone that can play with Nick Suzuki for the next 10 years. Like, if you have two centers that model their game after Patrice Bergeron, I've always maintained, like I used to maintain this about the Detroit Red Wings with Zetterberg and Datsyuk. When your best offensive players are also your best defensive players, it's a coach's dream because you can't lose a line matchup. Yep. It's impossible to lose a line matchup. So the idea, if you're Montreal going up the gut with Suzuki and Wright for the next 10 years, man, to me, that is just too juicy to pass up. Although, and here's where I'll throw one of those, although, you know, sort of qualifiers here. Although, what if you're Montreal and you think that you're getting Pierre-Luc Dubois from Winnipeg? Do you still draft Shane Wright? That's another wrinkle here.
And do you think that would that kind of move would be on the table tonight?
Could be.
So
honestly, like JD, there's so much going on. Like teams attaching their first round pick to bad contracts, and we've heard that. There's the Alex DeBrincat situation. I think that there's three, maybe four teams that have made significant offers to the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, I think the Ottawa Senators might be one of those teams as well. So we'll see if the DeBrincat situation gets cleared up. Like there's a ton right now. It says there's, you know, a number of teams that there's a lot of things happening in concert. A lot of teams will want to clear up their cap situation. It's a flat cap universe. And this is a draft where after pick number 10, you know, I was having a conversation yesterday with the Arizona Coyotes general manager, Bill Armstrong, who said, listen, after 10, this thing is going to be a spray. Everybody has different players all over the place. Like trying to nail down what, put together, cobble together some type of idea of what the 32 players that are going to be selected are going to be, regardless of what the order is, just trying to get to 32 is a nightmare and next to impossible. So if you bring all these things together at the same time, it does sort of wink at, you know, if not scream at the idea that we're going to see some movement tonight. And if not tonight, then tomorrow.
So, yeah, that I was going to say, though, that I actually – so we started the show today, and I went with the – I don't know what we're going to see tonight, and I don't have nearly, you know, even close to a microcosm of the information that you have. But it felt like to me that there's urgency with the DeBrincat thing and that they're going to have to make this decision kind of now. But that everything else to me is like – it reeked of a quieter draft because you would think that because it is that spray chart type of draft where there are certain teams with all kinds of different boards that you'd have a lot of teams that would end up in positions where they would go, we can't believe this guy fell to us, right? That they would go, wow, in our eye of the beholder, this guy's here, we got to take him because our scouting department really backed it up. And because of the cap, it feels like the asks for teams to dump those contracts is going to be so astronomical that it sort of paralyzes teams. So I think it's kind of interesting the way that you look at it, because we've heard so many names and so many teams want to make action. So many teams want to do this. So many teams want to do that. And my assumption was sort of that because it's the everybody lies thing that we ended up seeing less than we end up seeing more. But you're going the completely different direction.
There are some teams actively, like we think of the Arizona Coyotes, like they're very much in the send us your bad contract business right now. And they're going to be in the send us your bad contract business for the next three seasons.
I was going to say, that's just what their organization is now, is the contract hub. Like, cool. Yeah. That's a fun fan base to cheer for. Like the four fans that like them. Hey, what are we doing this? What bad contracts are we taking on this year for future picks? Awesome. What a team. Anyway,
they are deliberately going into this saying we're going to take a lot of bullets and a lot of pain until this rink gets built. Oof. And that's when their plan their plan is all building towards. Okay, the rink is built and finally we've cobbled together a team. But make no mistake about it, the Coyotes are in the bad contract business. Buffalo is in the bad contract business too. Now Buffalo, who already has one first round pick, you know, do they look at, you know, picking up a bad contract from another team for another second round pick? It's not out of the realm of possibility at all. I think that the two teams to watch for today in the bad contract business and picking up multiple picks here are those two teams, Arizona and Buffalo. Watch those two. It wouldn't surprise me if one or both of those teams, you know, get another pick for Arizona. That'd be their fourth first round pick. Grab another one here as they gobble up bad deals. And I wonder about Philadelphia. Like, could that team be – Philly needs space. And we all believe that Johnny Gaudreau, you know, is coveted by the Philadelphia Flyers. If they want to do this, they need to clear cap space and fast. Okay, the Philadelphia Flyers need to do something really quickly here if they're going to create enough cap room to bring on Johnny Gaudreau. Does that mean they sacrifice the fifth overall pick to do it? That's a huge discussion. And if they think yes, then, know, the Philadelphia Flyers could be one of the teams that shocks everybody today, and they'll be the most transparent move because they move that pick and attach a bad contract to it. You know, that's probably for Johnny Gaudreau.
What about somebody doing the same thing for DeBrincat? I feel like if someone's going to make a move on him today, you'd have to attach possibly a first-round pick for him. That's been the biggest, you know, the biggest trade bait as of late is what's going to happen with him. Do you have any inklings on who might be doing that or if that might happen tonight?
We all think New Jersey. That's the one team I think that everybody has circled as well. I do wonder about the Ottawa Senators. If they could be involved in that conversation as well. And then there's always, you know, always a team that we don't see coming and bam, wow, okay, well, now that we look at it, maybe we should have thought about those two. But everybody is wondering about New Jersey. Are they ultimately the team here that put together the best package to bring aboard Alex DeBrincat? First of all, I think there should be a lot of teams involved in Alex DeBrincat personally. I know a lot of teams are capped out so they can't, but I think if you have the cap space, I mean, what's not to like about a guy that's going to pop 40 goals for you every year? The only thing about DeBrincat is, you know, 2 years until he's a free agent. Is that enough to give up something sizable? Like, if you're – like, let's just say Ottawa, for example. And again, I'm not saying that, you know, Ottawa is going to end up getting Alex DeBrincat here, but, you know, they have the 7th overall draft pick, okay? Given that it's only 2 years of team control, is that enough to give up the 7th overall pick plus, because it's going to take more than that? Or if you're the New Jersey Devils and you're drafting 2nd overall, is 2 years of team control worth giving up that 2nd overall draft pick? That's more of a tough one than the 7th, but still, I think it's a legitimate question.
I really like when teams are in that phase that the Devils and the Sens are in right now, where they want to kind of take that step. And you never like it when it feels rushed and it feels like too much, but our buddy Matthew Barnaby, he was predicting that he thinks Ottawa's going to move the 7th overall pick tonight. And I really love that Ottawa's frisky right now, like that they're connected to all.
A lot of people are talking about that. A lot of people are talking about them moving that pick.
That's just like a lot of people talking about them moving their pick. A lot of people talking about them getting aggressive in a trade. People are talking about them going after like Claude Giroux and trying to bring him back to Ottawa and have him be home. I like that they're frisky and that they feel relevant. And it's why, like, when you mention that Sabres thing of them taking on a bad contract, I go, okay, that would be a nice piece of business. And whatever, like, a lot of times you can really take advantage of the market and be smart about it. But you say that and I go, man, Buffalo's been bad for so long now, and they've been such in a bad state that I want them. They had a little momentum last year at the end of it, and I want to see you kind of be a team that looks towards taking a step. And I kind of like where Ottawa's at right now, and it really does feel like all of a sudden they're buzzy again, you know, like they're just a buzzy, fun team right now.
They're a very buzzy team, and they've got a really, really deep prospect depth chart. Like, and some play, and a lot of it's on the back end. They need to hit on some more forwards here. Although we think that Shane Pinto, provided he stays healthy, is going to be an Ottawa Senator all season long. But whether it's Jake Sanderson, who we expect to see on that blue line, whether it's, you know, Lassie Thompson, Jacob Bernard Docker, Tyler Cleven eventually, like, there's some good young defensemen in this prospect pool that we're going to start to see populate the Ottawa defense. They still need to shore up their forwards and bring on some more scoring. But you're right, they're ready to make that. Ottawa is very much ready to make that last step. As you know, Pierre Dorion said last season, maybe I misspoke about talking about the rebuild over. Maybe I should have just said, you know, all the right pieces are in place. They're a team that's ready to take that next step. But I want to submit another team to you guys, that a team that's ready to take the next step, and it's someone that has a very, very patient general manager. But you know that there's only so much the organization and specifically the fan base will take. And they do have some key young pieces already in place now, and they have a lot of cap space to make moves. And that's the Detroit Red Wings. I wonder if this is the offseason where we see Steve Yzerman say, okay, we've got Moritz Seider, we've got Lucas Raymond, we've got Simon Edvinson coming next season. He's going to start on the back end with us. We've got whoever we're going to draft this season. We got Sebastian Cusso of the Oil Kings coming at the 15th overall pick from last year. You know, now we need to go into the free agent pool or the draft pool. We need to look at the Nazem Kadri's, because we need help down the middle. We need to look at the Andrew Copps because we need some help on the wing as well. Yzerman doesn't say in the, he's the new Lou, as we call him, the new Lou Lamoriello. Nothing gets out. But I wonder if this is the off season where, you know, Yzerman says we need to start being more competitive here. We have some good pieces in place. We have good prospects on the horizon. Everybody knows that. But now we need to start, you know, to put together a team that can win some games and they have the cap space to do it. Or do they go the other route and say, hey, we got cap space, our rebuild's not done, we're in the bad contract business.
Yeah.
And we're just gonna pick up some more first. I think it's the former, that they look at, you know, populating this team with legit NHLers that can help them win as soon as next season. But to me, the Detroit Red Wings are gonna be one of the more fascinating teams this offseason, and they still have a contract to do with Dylan Larkin, and we'll see how that negotiation goes.
It's weird because I think the flat cap really changed a lot of the philosophical outlook of just like the way you weaponize cap space now, right?
That
it makes it way more of a debate in terms of, hey, are you going to take on bad contracts or are you going to try to win with guys on rookie deals? Because it used to be like the Blackhawks did it with the winning on rookie deals thing, and then that became the big time obsession for everybody. Like if you remember the Leafs conversation, maybe I'm doing this a little too like Leaf centric here, but that is how I remember it. It was not a lot of, hey, should you take on a bad contract if you're the Leafs? It was, you guys got to try to win right now before these guys get contracts, and that's the way to do it. And I do find it kind of interesting, like when you brought up Detroit, I go, no one, again, this is my orbit versus your orbit, but in the more casual discussion around some of these teams, it is way more in the, you got to be patient, you don't want to sign someone to a big contract, a bad contract. Like when you said Nazem Kadri, I go, wow, that makes so much sense. And yet it's not someone that I would have traditionally thought of for that team, given like their spot in the developmental curve. So maybe that's kind of what's happening here. And what's really fascinating about this draft, Jeff, or like the draft tonight, is you do have all these teams kind of like Buffalo and Ottawa and New Jersey and Detroit who are going to have to decide one of those two paths. Do you weaponize the cap space by trying to surround your young team with good talent and trying to win in that? Or do you try to play a longer game, a more patient game, take on some contracts and really try to pile up assets and decide to make a move that's further down the line?
Yeah, the other player that I wonder about with Detroit, just to get it out there, and it's probably more of a conversation for free agent window opening next week, is Ryan Strome. I wonder about Ryan Strome to the Detroit Red Wings. The Kadri thing is interesting because the one thing we know about Darren Ferris from Cortex, who's the agent here, is that guy gets his clients every last nickel. He gets his clients every single dime that they have coming to them. He's excellent at walking players to free agency, setting themselves up so they get the maximum value on their deals. And Detroit needs centers, and Detroit has a lot of cap space. That's why I don't know that he ultimately ends up there, but it does feel like it makes some sense. And knowing they need centers, I wonder about Ryan Strome to Detroit as well. But you're right. Like, the one thing the flat cap has done is to really polarize teams. Like, okay, make your decision. There's no more, well, maybe we'll see how we do this year, you know, a year of development. No. This is like, decide who you are. That's why, as uncomfortable as A, the salary cap is, B, a flat salary cap is, what it does do, though, is it forces you to publicly declare who you are, which is always more interesting.
Okay, so last one. We've already abused your time, but we're
fine.
One more.
I don't have a meeting until 9. I'm good.
We're going to do the what's it called? The tie-in. We talked about all the people that are lying, and it's liar time. What do you make of the way Kyle Dubas has approached heading into this draft? Because he speaks yesterday, and he seems like a guy who is very cool and very comfortable with where his team's at. They're going to lose one of their more important forwards in Ilya Mikheyev. He doesn't seem happy about the negotiations the way that they're public. He's going to lose his starting goaltender. But he's talking about things like, yep, we might be fine with Mrazek. Yep, we might be fine with where we're at with Sandin. Yep, we seem to be fine with 25 and the limited amount of cap space. Do you think that what he is doing is, I don't want to call him a liar, but I'm saying, like, do you think he's doing a good job of lying? Do you think he's as cool and calm under the surface as he seems to be portraying outwardly?
I think that he's doing a good job not panicking. I think we all know what the issues are around the Maple Leafs. And I think that the worst thing that, you know, that Dubas can do is sort of betray any type of frustration. I think in his job, he needs to present control. But we all know there are huge decisions here. We all know what the goalie market is, and we all know the Maple Leafs need one. We all know the situation with Peter Mrazek. But he's not going to go out there. Like, I think the stupidest thing would have been for Dubas to go out there and just scotch the guy publicly. You know, like, that's what Twitter's for. Like, that's not what Dubas is going to do. And if you're going to do anything with Peter Mrazek, you know, all you do is you devalue the asset if you go out there and starch him publicly. So I think that he's being deliberately calm about the whole thing. I mean, every team has issues. Like, no one's as calm as they seem when they're, you know, in front of a camera or in front of assembled media. But I think we all know what the issues are here with the Maple Leafs. They're not the only team that has issues around the NHL. They get amplified because it is Toronto. But I think that, you know, Dubas is doing what any general manager worth his salt would do in this situation, is presenting the idea that, you know, rightly or wrong, factually or unfactually, you have a plan for everything that is being thrown at you. And a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, with, you know, the multitude of brain trust that they have, like, there's no way they haven't planned out all these different scenarios. Now, can they control all those scenarios? Absolutely not. But I don't believe that Dubas goes into a draft or a free agency without really having a very deliberate plan. That is not his MO. This is someone who's very, and always has been, going back to when he was a junior agent at Uptown. This is someone that doesn't go into anything without having a plan, or at least a couple of plans, depending on, you know, where the facts end up taking him. I think he's doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing right now.
A plan that he likes to keep close to his heart as well.
Not
a lot of information trickling out about what's going to happen today, but looking forward to it. And thanks so much for joining us, Jeff. I hope you enjoy the draft.
This is fun. I love the draft. I know it's all about the kids and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, junior hockey and, you know, youth hockey and minor hockey and all this stuff is near and dear to my heart. It's my first hockey love. So this is a Christmas morning for me, guys. Be happy for your buddy, Jeffy.
I love that you were like, it's all about the kids, but don't forget, it's actually all about me.
Don't forget about how happy this makes me. You know,
hey, I'm into it, dude. I'm into it.
What's the old saying? There's no I in team, but there's two I's in invoice. Let's just remember that. It's all about me.
we'll happily pay it for today. Jeff Merrick, 32 Thoughts. Thanks again for making time. This is great.
Thanks, Drew.
See you, dude.
Insider was brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
The Wake and Rake was nailed yesterday.
Smashed that
three
real quick.
For three, no sweats, easy money, lock it down, make it happen. Can we go into Friday? Can we have a baby Friday? Another rip. That's next. The Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet, with JD and Ailish, Sports at 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
It's time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. The Wake and Rake yesterday, bing bong, hits 3 for 3, no sweat, no problem, no issues. What was the parlay, Ailish? Like plus five something? What, plus
544? 544, I believe.
I believe.
Let me get my stats out.
I guess you didn't play it because you
I did. I can go pull it up, sir.
That's what I'd like to see.
Boop up.
Boop up. What did it do? Wake and Rake wins. Wake and Rake's been red hot lately, honestly. Like, we're back in the heater zone. Things have been just as, like, popping off. Now tonight, can we replicate that on a lighter slate? I don't usually, like, I bet a lot on the NBA draft and the NFL draft. I will admit that the NHL draft is not one that I'm like, I get geared up for and fire a lot of bets on. Like, I'll probably ask a few people, like our buddy Nick Richard, like, hey, what do you think about this? But it's really especially tough when this NHL draft, Merrick just described it as, after the 10th pick, and Nick said the same thing, everybody has basically a completely different board. So to me, this is one where, and I don't have these lines up in front of me because I was kind of frantically searching for them this morning. I couldn't find them. But this is always the fun ones for me, usually, when I do draft bets, is if you feel very strongly about a certain player getting picked above a certain slot, like, you know, the Sacramento Kings making the right selection at four, then you do that. That's fun, right? That's fun trying to nail a pick. But the other one, a bet that I always like is over-unders for the amounts of players from different leagues.
Oh, I got that for you.
Being taken in those rounds. I have no pick for anybody. I don't have a pick. So if you pull it up, it doesn't matter. But Normally what I will like to do, which is I'll say, like, I'm going to root for WHL guys to get drafted tonight. And it is so fun seeing the team you pick or the league you pick and having those players go off the board. It's just, it's great. I love it. It's a fun bet.
There's lots of picks about our guy, Jimmy Snuggaroo. You want to pick him first overall? Shocker. 25,000 plus 25,000 odds. Just $5. Never know. Jimmy Snuggaroo, steal of the draft.
Hey, you know what, though? I'm glad you have this up in front of you right now because we learned this through the NBA draft this year, which is, hey, no offense to the insiders, but the ultimate insider is the Vegas lines.
Paolo Banchero, what do you want to know? I got that all up.
Well, if you recall, I don't hit puberty there.
You good there, buddy?
If you recall, we saw Paolo Banchero at ridiculous odds early in the morning. And then Woj came on and was like, no, it doesn't necessarily need to be Paolo. And all of a sudden, the odds shut down. And we gave it to people at a good price. What are the odds saying right now for Shane Wright going first and Yuri Slavkovsky going first? Like, what is it right now?
Wright's at minus 275 to go first overall. And Slavkovsky is minus 225 to go second.
What's Slavkovsky to go first?
Plus 185.
Plus 185, yeah.
That's not enough. I was going to say, if that was like plus 300, plus 350, based on the conversation we just had with Merrick, where he talked about Montreal's desire to get two picks, what they could be doing in free agency at the center position or through the trade market with Pierre-Luc Dubois, how much that they're trying to get the number two pick in terms of maybe being influenced. The fact that Slavkovsky might be more NHL ready, I don't know. If it would have been plus three something, I would have considered it. But I think that Vegas line tells you that the smoke is a little bit real around this, right? Like, minus 275 is not an insane favorite. Like, that's like a football game with a 7-point spread, like a touchdown spread. It's really not that big of a deal. So it's kind of interesting that it's still there.
Nick Richard, who we just had on, really liked that Liam Ogren guy to maybe fall to the Leafs at 25th. If you want to bet him over 21.5 draft pick number, it's minus 112. I know that's just like a little fun one that our insider Nick Richard said he would hope for. But there's a lot of like over-unders on draft choices. There's a lot of who gets drafted first between two players.
I don't like those bets.
I don't know those ones much.
I don't like those bets later in the rounds because it's just like, so again, I like ones where it's volume that you're playing it all like a bingo card. Like, I love picks where it goes, how many cornerbacks will be taken in the first round of the NFL draft? And you take over 3.5 and you sit there and a corner gets taken 5th overall and then one doesn't get picked till 21 and you're just sitting there sweating it out. I like
picks where they don't have that, sadly.
I know, but that's what I mean. But I like it where, no, but they will have positional. They'll have how many defensemen
taken
in the first
round. They have total forwards drafted in the first round and total defensemen drafted in the first round.
I think those ones are more fun. They're bang for your buck bets, right? Like, again, what do we always say about gambling? It should be entertainment dollars. You shouldn't be viewing this as a way to make money. You should be looking at this as a way to have fun. My opinion is when it comes to drafts and draft betting, that the best way to have fun is to increase the bet over the longest time frame. Like, mm-hmm. so to me, those bets are, what are you going to, are you going to bet the defenseman or the forward overs? The defenseman forward over unders, whatever. Goaltender over unders. Things that last all the way till the end of the first round or potentially could, those to me are fun. It's like, I don't know. I just, that's my philosophy when it comes to betting is fun, and that's way more fun. But guys from Sweden, how many Swedes will be drafted? Like, I like those kind of bets. Mm-hmm. And I will be splashing the board at some point today with a few of those bets.
My only counter to that is that the head-to-head who gets picked higher later in the first round is, first of all, it gives that's you something you're more locked in on. But also, like, that is the potential to, like, you just irrationally dislike or love a guy for the rest of his career.
Yeah, I do
because,
like that.
You know, Tyler like Brennan went ahead of Topias Leonen. And you're like, yes, Tyler Brennan's my guy now. Yeah. Topias can go away, you know. I think that that's there's a little bit of fun in those ones.
How about this head-to-head matchup? Jimmy Snuggaroo and Rutger McGroarty.
That's not a name.
You can bet that one. Rutger McGroarty and Jimmy Snuggaroo. That's the best head-to-head matchup you can do tonight.
You know, we obviously have to ride with our guy Snuggaroo.
Minus 200 for Snuggaroo. It's not good value on him.
He's a stud. He's an absolute stud, Jimmy is. So, of course. But, Rutger McGroarty, the center from the USHL, big guy, physical guy. I like I'm a big McGroarty guy as well. So, you know, I like my
How about Jagr Furkus? Best name, also best flow. Combination of those two.
Haven't seen
Oh my God, look him up right now.
I will not. I will keep moving on to our other bets. Okay, quickly before we go into the Jays bets, you can send me a picture of him in our DM chat, but I gotta navigate. You know how this is, the operation of moving between these bets. Okay, so the Jays line is not up right now, which I'm trying to read into why that would be, other than the fact that it's a late game. Like, is this, do you think that this is all related to Kevin Gausman, Blake? Because that was my first thought. I know that he's supposed to go later in the week, but he wasn't going to go Thursday. But do you think that this relates to, like, the way they're trying to deploy the pitching staff, who's going tonight, how this is operating? Like, what? Why do we not see a line yet?
Yeah, I think the big thing is we don't know yet if the Jays are going to just roll out Casey Lawrence or if they're going to do an opener or something like that.
Yeah.
I would think that the market is waiting on a roster move or two as well. Just, you know, they tend to be doing the up and down thing with the pitchers here. And they are juggling some stuff, right? Like, we've heard not only is Kevin Gausman not going to start today, but it's possible he starts Sunday, which would then bump Yusei Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to give him an extended rest, you know, there's possibility for Phantom IL stuff. But really, I think this is about we don't know who's starting or opening. And without that information, they just don't want to put a lineup. And, you know, part of it probably, too, is West Coast game. They don't need to rush it because you've got kind of all day to get that money coming in.
So I have a little piece of information for everybody involved.
Wow.
Everybody is talking about how awesome the Blue Jays offense has been the last month and how the offense isn't the problem and blah, blah, blee, blue, and how it's so amazing. And I said to Ennis earlier that I actually think that the offense is – it's weird to say this because baseball is such a sport where you can quantify everything with the numbers. I think their offense is overrated. I think that it's a little too streaky, a little too one-dimensional, and that they are really great at piling it on and they hit for power. And so when they are hitting, they look great. But that there are, like, real flaws with this offense and with the approach, and it's one of the things that drives me nuts with this team. That they are unbelievably talented, but that they do not maximize the talent at times. Over the last 2 weeks, I think this would surprise you. What do you think the Jays are doing against left-handed pitching? Because they see a lefty tonight, Marco Gonzalez, who's been pretty successful. Just give me a guess. Don't look it up, Blake. I know you can look it up. I know you're...
I'm looking up something different.
You're the fastest looker-upper in the West, all right? You're the fastest looker-upper in the West.
He's looking up the weather.
How you realize you guys are accusing me of having looked up something that you hadn't brought up yet. I'm not – I can't jump
what your you're going to say. Over there
not, I'm not going to do the Jeopardy thing of, like, you answer before the question gets asked.
My point is simply that Blake is an elite looker-upper. Okay, mm-hmm. Blake is just incredible. I cannot believe that I said this before. When Blake first announced that he was leaving his last job, I thought it was because he was going to work for a front office, and I actually wasn't sure what sport it was in. That was literally the only question that I had, was what sport is it in, what city is it in? And then I was surprised to learn that, you know, he was going to be working with us. But if you had to guess right now, over the last 2 weeks, 111 plate appearances, which is not that much, but like it's something. It's not like 2 weeks and they didn't face any lefties, right, or any left-handed pitching. 111 plate appearances over a little over 2 weeks. Where do you think the Blue Jays are in terms of like 1 through 30 teams? What would you set the over-under at for the number one offense in baseball against left-handed pitching?
I can't tell if you're saying that this was if they're doing well or they're doing poorly.
They're definitely not doing well.
That's the problem.
I just don't know if it's
but his tone is like how bad are we talking? I'm going to say that they are 27th.
Okay, I'm going to say over. I'm going to say they're better than that, but not significantly.
They are 27th, which
no way. I swear, you know why I picked that? Because that's my jersey number.
There's no
Googling involved. That's my number, my jersey number. I'm always a number 27 girl.
Here's the thing, Ailish. Nobody was going to accuse you because no one's ever going to think that you pulled that number up in two seconds.
There's no
way. I don't think that's hey, dude. That's
not
your game.
I'm the most proud of myself. I've been in a long time right now.
No, that was a great guess. They're 27th, and yeah, Blake, you're right in that they have not been doing. They're OPSing against lefties over the last 111 plate appearances, 558. It's pas bon. Yeah. They're averaging 200. They're on base, 243. They have not done very well against left-handed pitching lately. Just something to think about as you're betting tonight's game when you're like when the line eventually does come up. I don't think people are going to be leaping at the opportunity to bet Casey Lawrence. I don't think people are going to be leaping at the opportunity to bet on the Toronto Blue Jays right now. But if you're talking about low confidence game, like if we're going to say let's guess the line here, let's mm-hmm. guess the line for what we would bet the Toronto Blue Jays at tonight, I genuinely think that the only way that I would be betting the Jays tonight if it's plus 200 or better.
It's not going to be that high. It's going to be close to a pick'em, I think.
And that's why I'm saying I will absolutely not. You think it's going to be close to a pick'em if it's an opener with this bullpen? Okay, yeah, that's a bold prediction.
I know, but look at what the lines have done whenever the Jays are sputtering a little bit. Like, it's we have to keep in mind the Ontario boost that a Toronto team's going to get. We saw it a lot with the Leafs in that last month when single event betting became legal, and we've seen it a lot with the Jays. The Jays have been pretty regularly overvalued.
I'm going to guess the line as Mariners minus 140.
Okay.
That'll be where I kind of land with it. I think that they will be more than pick'em favorites, but you're right, Blake. I don't think that they will be significant ones. Either way, this is a classic fade JD moment, but I would be saying that if I think that they're – because this is baseball, right? It's like when you think you have something, it usually zags, and that's this Blue Jays team. It's like they're the ultimate zag team this year. But either way, I just look at the state of this bullpen right now. The state of this pitching staff – going up against a Mariners team that absolutely hates it when Toronto fans overpopulate their stadium, who has been hotter lately, who knows that they're kind of on
good.
Toronto's sneaky good team with some sneaky good bats, having their guy on the mound, knowing that left-handed pitching has been effective against the Blue Jays lately. Jays in a bit of a slump. They're like don't look quite themselves right now. A lot of drama around the team. I'm just saying that this, to me, feels like a night where you would happiness hedge and bet the Mariners if it's close to a pick'em, like Blake says. If this number is Mariners minus 135,
it's going to be 127.
If it's that, then it is your civic duty as a a sharp to pick the Mariners. I'm sorry, but like you have to put money on the Mariners if you're a serious sports bettor. If that's what the line comes in at tonight, if it's minus 140, like what I think it's going to be your worst, just stay away. But yeah, I just. This is a good spot for the Mariners. I'm just saying. I don't feel good about the Jays tonight.
Yeah.
We just got a good text in about... Oh, sorry. Go ahead,
Ailes.
I was just saying someone texted in saying, JD the degenerate gambling on the odds of gambling.
Yeah. It's my favorite thing
to
do.
That's right.
Honestly.
It's like how whenever JD's not on, I pick the the five inning under that I think JD would have picked. Right. And I think I'm like perfect guessing which one JD would have picked.
Of course you are. You get the spreadsheet, so.
Yeah, I get the spreadsheets, get the thing. although, listen, I'm on a bit of a heater right now, and it also includes an over. So, you know, we're not staying in the ultimate predictable range. I will say tonight's slate, like if we want to get into our best bets now, when I was looking at tonight's slate, I did have the thought of there's not a ton of, like, pitching slash offensive matchups that I like in terms of unders. Like, I think that the only one, like, if Blake was going to make a prediction for me, it would be with his boy Musgrove and Logan Webb. But
already got it written down.
Yeah, but even that one, like, I'm feeling a little shaky on because the number is so low. Either way, Ailish, what's your best bet tonight?
Well, I'm going with the Dodgers on the run line. They're a plus 144 run differential, which is 80 runs better than the next NL team. Their starting pitcher is one of the best pitchers in baseball, Tony Gonsolin. He's going for his 11th win. He's 10-0, and he has the best OBP in baseball, and a second in WHIP. All right, I might even go the alternate run line and do minus 2.5 runs, but for our sake, I'm going to do just the regular run line because I don't want to get too aggressive. So that's minus 125 on Unibet over the Cubs tonight.
So can you say the bet?
Yes. Dodgers run line over the Cubs minus 125 on Unibet.
Okay, so minus 1.5. I'm doing something similar. I'm going to be taking the Astros and laying the run line as well. It's Justin Verlander against Chris Bubik. The Royals stink and the Astros are good. And this is just a straight up forward play of I think that they're going to beat him up. I think that they're going to beat him by a couple runs. And so, yeah, I'm going to lay 1.5 runs, play the run line, and I will be betting the Houston Astros tonight with Justin Verlander on the mound. There's something about that
like
Musgrove.
Theme.
Well, I looked at the Musgrove line earlier today and I said, all right, I kind of like that. But I think if anything in that game, Blake, I would be betting the Musgrove strikeout number again. Like he's a punch out artist and I like him for that. So I kind of like Musgrove with his strikeouts over. But I didn't really love any of the lines in terms of like the value of any of these picks. So yeah, I'm going to go with the Houston Astros again, good team versus horrific team. Hall of Fame elite pitcher still somehow in his prime with a 2.03 ERA, against a team that he's historically dominated. I like the Astros tonight.
All right. I'm going to keep it all run lines. I'm going to go White Sox against the Tigers, Dylan Cease against Bo Brisky. The White Sox are starting to heat up at the plate, and that's maybe a little bit. They're just getting healthy, but they are 115 WRC plus over the last 30 days, so about 15% better than league average. That's top six in the league. That's right behind the Toronto Blue Jays. Detroit is, of course, not very good. They've been a little better the last month, but you're still talking about Dylan Cease against a team that's 13 games under 500. Pretty straightforward one here on a night that I don't see a ton of value. I was going to go maybe Musgrove Webb in the five inning under, but you guys both went run line, so let's make it a full run line day.
I had to go run line, though, because, again, I had that last two – it's basically now the last 2.5 weeks against left-handed pitching, in which Chris Bubik is. The Astros are OPSing over 900 against lefties the last couple of weeks. Like, I don't see a scenario where this guy – who's got an ERA of, let me quickly double-check this, 0.7, gets through an Astros lineup that's tattooing left-handed pitching right now and is completely locked in and that they just don't put up a ton of runs. Like, if they can't beat them by two, I will be very, very disappointed in the Houston Astros. Like, you don't need any drums to bang to beat the bum of the bum team and score some runs on them. So, yeah, that's why I had to do this one tonight. Also, you know, I just wanted to – I don't want to be predictable. I don't want Blake writing down my picks, all right? I want to zag. I'm just like the Blue Jays. I'm trying to zag too. Okay, before we go, I'm okay. So our picks tonight, a bunch of run lines. We're basically – the theme of the day is betting the good teams against the bad teams and laying the extra runs. Ailish is going with the Dodgers to beat the Cubs. The Cubs, again, a team that are absolutely openly tanking right now. They've got 34 wins. The Royals have 30 wins. and the Tigers have 34. So, yeah, none of the teams that we're betting against, very competitive this year. All of us laying the runs, all of us laying 1.5. Blake, before we go, I want to ask
plus you. Plus 455 today on Unibet for our parlay.
Awesome. Good parlay. Good parlay. Nice plus 455 parlay. Before we go, I asked Ennis a question earlier, and it's weird timing for this question, but I am curious as to your thoughts on it. Why do you think Bo Bichette has completely escaped criticism this season? He has the home run last night. He gives them the winning run. But if you compare him to, say, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when Vladdy was struggling for a month, or Teoscar Hernandez even when he came off the IL, why do you think it is that the guy who is right now only a one-war player, according to Baseball Reference, is basically a complete non-story when it comes to fan, media, any type of discussion?
I mean, I did have a segment yesterday talking about moving him down in the order because he's once again on the wrong side of that aggression, patience, balance. And he's, again, like we've talked about, he's a guy you want him to stay aggressive, but he's also setting the table for Vlad and a red-hot Alejandro Kirk and Teoscar Hernandez. I think it might